Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to talk today about the late playwright Sam Shepard and one of his plays that is about to go on the boards, or is now on the boards, at the Kansas City Actors Theater. It's called A Lie of the Mind, and it's directed by Cinnamon Schultz. And with us to tell us all about Mr. Shepard, his play, A Lie of the Mind, and the story thereof, are two of the participants in the show. Forrest Attaway is with us as well. He is the
artistic director of the associate producer, William Inge Foundation.
And is co-producer of the William Inge Foundation as well as a local producer, director, playwright, things of that nature. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. Jake Walker is with us as well. He's been here a few times.
Yeah.
A few times as well. He is probably most known for his many appearances at the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival. We're up to 9 productions now.
Yeah, that's it's been. I've had a long, awesome history with the festival.
You have. You started very here. Grateful. You went to Denver.
Yep.
You came back. You've appeared at various places. The Shakespeare Festival as well, where at least 9 productions you've been in. The Coterie, the Unicorn, and many productions out in Denver as well.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
A Lie of the Mind. I guess. You mentioned for us that Sam Shepard was one of your favorite playwrights.
Absolutely. Probably my favorite playwright growing up, when I started to experience theater and reading plays and seeing plays, his work stood out to me almost immediately, like even back in high school. I just found him completely engaging and raw, gritty, and growing up as a country boy in East Texas, you know, it just sort of spoke to my soul.
The realism is what I hear people say all the time. The realism of the Shepard play is something that really attracts them to the show.
That, and partnered with the surrealism of it, and sort of what we would call magic realism or escapism. I mean, there's so many elements to his work that are just profound.
With his passing in July, are there any... does it give it a special significance for either one of you?
Well, it definitely, you know, it reminds you of the kind of ephemeral nature of what we do. I think a lot of times when you have great playwrights like that have been so present in the national conversation my whole life, Sam Shepard has been a successful playwright, a known playwright. And when those people, move on to the next... you know, whatever, it reminds us that, oh, yeah, okay, so we're not going to get another Sam Shepard play.
Yeah, he's written things. He's also performed as an actor at times. Absolutely. Over the years as well.
I think he's written 44 plays, or he wrote 44?
Something like that, yeah.
Quite. I think he was in Steel Magnolias.
I think he
was Dolly Parton's husband.
Well, that would be an interesting challenge, wouldn't it?
But I might be wrong.
Well, we'll fact check that for you and get back to it. No fake news, of course,
right,
in this
yes.
program. Absolutely not. Well, why did Actors Theater choose to do this? Obviously, they put this on the schedule long before there was any news about Sam Shepard's health or anything like that. Do you any background why they wanted to do this particular show?
Well, I know that it fits right into their mission statement. You know, it's an American playwright. It's class. You know, it's modern classic. You know, and Cinnamon, I know, has also loved Sam Shepard for a long time. I think she's been in some Sam Shepard. I think all actors love Sam Shepard, and it being the Actors Theater, I think it was a natural fit, because the plays that he writes are acting athletic events. You know, there's always physical demands of one or more characters and emotional demands of everybody in the play. So it's
absolutely
a dynamic kind of athletic feat that we're doing here.
Yeah, I can't speak to their steering committee or how they choose their plays at the Kansas City Actors Theater, but yeah, like Jake said, it's very much in their mission statement to do plays that actors want to do. And Sam Shepard is always, well, it's always a lot of work, and it's always a lot of fun, and it's always interesting to see how these artists work together, because Shepherd is the banding. It's, I think someone once considered him our version of Chekhov at one point, the American version of Chekhov. Mm-hmm. And I remember back in college, I was part of an exchange program where these this group of professional Russian actors came over, and they were presenting Sam Shepard's play True West in Russian. And then we had taken, I think it was a Seagull, to Russia and performed it there in English. So it was kind of an interesting sort of dichotomy between the two.
Well, that's so. How did the Russian audience react
to
your
say,
particular
Americans
version?
Don't understand Chekhov. Chekhov's funny. You guys take him way too seriously.
I suppose they would think that,
yeah.
Of course. Tell me about the show, Alive the Mind. Tell us the storyline of the story.
Right. So we have two families, two households, both pretty much alike in dignity, I guess. We have my family. I'm Frankie. I have a brother, Jake. A mother, Lorraine, and a sister named Sally. That's Brian Paulette, plays Jake. Merle Morris, the classy, amazing Merle.
Hmm.
And an actress who is newly returned to town, Hillary Clemens Harbor, who played Ophelia in Hamlet. So we have that family. And then across the country, a.k.a. the stage, we have Jan Rogge plays Meg, Gary Neal Johnson plays Baylor, and Christina Schaefer plays
Beth.
And so there was a marriage between our families that recently pretty much ended in a violent assault. Husband beat up the wife.
Oh my.
And now we start the play just as that schism has developed. And we see each family more or less start to process that separation, to recover from that tearing apart of Jake and Beth. We see her act literally healing physically from her wounds. Like I said, there's some twists. And so I'm afraid, I don't want to give anything away, but we see how the two families want to protect themselves by physical force, by manipulation, or by, hence the title of the play, lying to themselves.
Uh-huh.
We all do that, you know. I'm doing that all the time now with the world. I'm good. Everything's fine. I'm that dog meme in the classroom that's on fire and saying, this is fine. So I think the title everyone can relate to.
Oh, sure. Well, we all do that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And thematically, like Jake was saying, it's not just two families dealing with this physical abuse, but it's also the emotional abuse, like the history that each family has endured outside of the marriage. And then, you know, there's always a sort of spirituality to Sam Shepard's plays. And I would definitely say there's this sort of element of spiritual abuse as well in the play. It's a very rich sort of tapestry of not just language, but imagery. It's parts of it are just absolutely gorgeous or haunting.
Yeah. There's a part, and again, I won't give the details away, but I first saw the play, and Forrest gets to perform this moment. There's a moment where a character comes on stage, and the image that Sam Shepard has written, Forrest comes in carrying something. And it is so, I remember seeing it and just going, holy moly, I am just the image of this character walking through the door has punched me in the gut. You know, he hasn't even said a word yet, and I'm floored.
Right.
Which is an amazing thing, to write in the parentheses in a stage direction, something so powerful.
And I think one of the coolest parts of this production, originally when Shepard premiered this play, he had a group of musicians, and I cannot remember the name to save my life right now. The
Red Ramblers Club?
Something like that, yeah. But the Red Clay Revival, I don't
remember. Yeah, it's Red Clay something.
Yeah, but they did an original score that accompanied the show, and Kansas City Actors Theater and all their brilliance, they went out and they got this country duo with Casey Don Roush that's all doing original music. In the same sort of spirit and vein that Shepard did originally for the original production. But it's all Kansas City, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, it's great. Sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Kansas City loves a local connection.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's a good reason for having it done like that.
And Cinnamon has, it's not just transitional music. I mean, we have this music underscoring scenes, and so it adds a much more cinematic element to the viewing experience.
As an actor, how many times have you performed where you had theme music going on at the same time? There was a time in theater history, at least around here, where that really wasn't done. You didn't really hear theme music
that
much.
I don't think it's done traditionally for the most part. I think it's becoming more so. I know that usually when I'm directing a show, I try to add, as no matter how subtle it is, some sort of underscoring, mm-hmm. Whether it's the air conditioner kicking on or kicking off. And there's a lot of that in this production as well. The technical team has done an excellent job. The design team has done a really great job as far as including all these little things like the flickering lights and just giving it so much texture visually that it's a feat. It looks great. I think it looks great. I've been doing this for over 20 years, so.
Yeah, it adds an element of realism, it sounds like. Just still yet another element of realism to go around and within it all for a more realistic theme.
One of the things that I've always appreciated about Mr. Shepard's work is, I remember one of the first things that ever made sense to me about writing plays is that plays should work like music. You know, they should have those crescendos and arpeggios, and like there should be a musicality to the work. Mm-hmm. The cool thing about Sam Shepard is, outside of being an actor and a playwright, he was also an avid jazz musician, and so his plays actually feel like jazz. They're structured that way. The architecture feels like this long sort of jazz piece, and with now you add these textured elements of the lights and the sounds and a car is going by, and there are scenes in a hospital, and you can hear all the ancillary noise. It does. If you could sit there, you could close your eyes and listen to this play. It would be like the old radio plays.
Mm-hmm.
It's that textured. It's that you're that immersed in the story.
Speaking with Forrest Attaway and Jake Walker, two of the performers in the Kansas City Actors Theater presentation of A Lie of the Mind, written by Sam Shepard, directed by Cinnamon Schultz, and it has already opened. It will run now through October the 1st at the City Stage Theater at Union Station. The number to call for more information, the Central Ticket Office number, 816-235-6222, or online at kcactors.org. Speaking with Forrest and Jake about the show, how does your character Jake fit into this mix?
I'm the brother of Brian Paulette's character, who's named Jake. My character's named Frankie, and it's funny. I'm a kind of a caretaker of my brother. And I also care for his former wife, who is definitely not okay after his violent outburst. So I spend a lot. I spend a lot of the first part of the play worrying, and then I go on a little journey to try to solve the problem of the play.
Can these problems ever really be solved, or will there forever be a grudge? I know you can't give away the ending.
But. Yeah, I think there Yeah, I don't want to give anything away, yeah, but right.
I guess what I mean is sometimes things can't be put back together. Sometimes they can.
Well, certainly,
sometimes
yeah.
they cannot.
I think one thing that I glean from the play is that when things fall apart, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're broken. It just means that they've changed.
Hmm.
And sure. we get a lot of that from Christina Schaefer's character, Beth, who has the brain injury, that she says essentially that part, you know, when something breaks, some parts stay, parts still float. So, and she says, this is me now. This is how I am. And so this is who I am now. I'm this way. I was that way. And so she's actually, I think, the most accepting of the world out of everybody in the play. She's
yeah,
the person who accepts
it
the most.
Forward.
Well, it sounds like a healthy attitude. I just wonder how often that's possible in reality.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the gifts that Shepard has always had in his work is, you know, we talk about the realism in his language and his relationships, but then his plays almost always move in a sort of in a much more expansive narrative. We talk about the dreamlike quality to his work where, and we were just talking about this the other day, if you're having a dream, like say a fever-induced dream, and you're actually having a normal conversation in your dream, and then all of a sudden someone walks in with a duck and wearing a crown or something like that, in your dream, it makes sense. Mm. You know, it's not out of place. And there's nothing quite as severe as that in this Shepard play, but he uses imagery and that sort of tonal shift stuff all the time to reveal a much more expansive element to whatever thematic narrative that he's trying to tell. So that's one of the things that's just remarkable about his work and pretty finite to his work. I mean, there are other playwrights that like to use this imagery and poetry in their work, but not to the success of Mr. Shepard.
Well, it would be hard to match some of his works. He's done so many marvelous things. One of you mentioned True West earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, which K-Cat did a few years ago.
Which was a reprise of theirs. Uh-huh. Like was it in their inaugural season? Then they did True West, and then they brought it back.
No, it wasn't a K-Cat revival. They did True West. The actors who played it at K-Cat, Mark Robbins and Jim Birdsall,
mm-hmm.
They actually played those roles 20-some-odd years ago.
I remember that now. Yes, they did.
And then they came back and did it again and showed us young bucks that...
Sometimes you can age the characters, which they did in that show. Yeah. In particular, and it worked fairly well. What other Shepard plays do you especially admire, both of you?
I just directed 3 years ago. I directed Fool for Love at the Living Room Theater, and I'm a big fan of Mr. Shepard's work, and that was a great experience for me. At the time, that was starring Jason Miller, and my now wife Amy mm-hmm. was in it. That's not how we met. We had met before then, but. And that was a fun experience. I've also, I've done quite a bit of Shepard, Barry Child, Curse of the Starving Class, Cowboy Mouth,
mm-hmm.
Kind of, I don't know, and then scenes from a myriad of other Shepard plays. So.
Perhaps I'm projecting out a little while, but you're very admiring of him, and you write at the same time. Does your own style maybe? And I'm not going to say copying, because no one really copies.
One of the biggest compliments I ever got was a letter of a recommendation that compared my work. They referred to it as sort of a cross between David Mamet and Sam Shepard.
Uh-huh.
And they talked about the natural intonations of Mamet with the sort of surrealistic elements of Sam Shepard. So, yeah, no, that's always been absolutely, it's been an influence on my writing as well. More so my dramas than the comedy stuff that I write.
Well, what about Jake? Any comment on any of that?
Gosh, you know, I'm not as familiar with all of Sam Shepard's as much as Forrest is, but definitely True West has made an impact on me. And he's one of those playwrights that that you really want to be in his plays, you know. Like to compare him to Arthur Miller, I mean, those are juicy roles.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to do that Death of a Salesman, but there's a different energy within me when I think about doing Sam Shepard. It's I don't know, like it seems like going out for beers with the boys. You know,
it's a visceral sort of thing to his work.
Well, and it feels like it allows you to. Okay, so I lived in Colorado for several years, and and I love the West, and Sam Shepard's writing is very evocative of the West. Did I use that word right?
Man, I think so.
Sounded good to me.
Evocative of the West.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So it speaks to me on that level, and this kind of, you know, small town, small community, salt of the earth. You know, the rules of our society are the rules of old John Wayne movies, or, you know, who shot Liberty
like
Valance.
The Last Frontier type.
Yeah, and just the sense of, like, not about what the law is, but what's right. What would a man do, you know? What would a man in the West with a beef do? It may not be legal, but to this person in the West, in this small community, I mean, it's gonna, you know, he's gonna do what he believes is right, and that's a fun kind of suit to put
on.
There's
a great ugly honesty to his work and those relationships that he builds, and yeah, I would say every one of his plays. So yeah, no, Jake's absolutely right.
And yet you're directed by a woman, Cinnamon Schultz. You both know pretty well.
Very, yep. Yeah. I've first worked with Cinnamon and Brian, her husband, who plays Jake, in 2002 at the Shakespeare Festival, and we've been in many, many plays together since then. She's played my sister. She's played my mother. She played my mother in Hamlet. And
oh, that's right.
Yeah, now she's playing all of our mothers as the director. And she's wonderful, you know, and she brings to directing what she brings to acting as well, which is a very empathetic attention to detail. She brings patience, and you know, she's been working on this play for probably over a year and a half, you know, before KCAT announced they were doing it, before they even had auditions. Cinnamon's been hitting the books, and you can tell she's very prepared, and that's a great quality for a director to have, you know, to exude, because it makes all the actors go, okay, we're good, we're safe.
Yeah, and I feel, especially as someone who's also directed Shepard, you have to be careful with his work. You have to be pretty decisive as far as what choices that you're going to make as a director, because I remember back in college, one of my instructors talking about doing Sam Shepard's work. It's like, you always got a good handle on the first two acts, and then when the third act comes around, you just kind of throw your hands up and go, well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But I think that that's the wrong approach. I think you should always have a really good idea. You should be very precise about the choices that you're making. And Miss, you know, Cinnamon's doing a great job with that. It's obvious, not only she's doing her homework, but, you know, our very first day, we just sat around and read the play and talked about it. And we found some great stuff. Everything's making sense, and a narrative that doesn't, if you just read it off the page, might not make sense. So, yeah, kudos to Cinnamon. It's my very first time to be working with her, either as an actor or a director, so I'm very impressed.
Sounds like she had a certain direction she wanted to go in ahead of time, hence the preparation you talked about.
I think you have to. When I directed Fool for Love, I was meeting with my designers 2 weeks before the actors ever came and read the play for the first time, because I had a very specific idea of the environment that the play was set in. And Simon has done, if not the same, more so with this play. Like, that's the thing to me that's, I'll say it again, that's really impressive is the environment, the actual physical environment that the Kansas City Actors Theater has created for this staging of the play.
Alive the Mind by Sham Shepard is in production now. It will run through October the 1st at the City Stage Theater at Union Station. Theater for Young America during the daytime, magically transformed into the Sam Shepard drama in the evening at the Union Stations down there on the ground floor of Union Station at the City Stage Theater. The number to call for more information, 816-235-6222 or online at kcactors.org. As I stumblingly asked earlier, Forrest is part of Cocopelli Productions. Tell us about them.
I'm the artistic director for Cocopelli, which is now like a new touring company. the joke is right now, it's we took over the company from, they used to work in Alaska and New York and New Orleans, and now I've moved it to Kansas City, but we're changing all the bylaws and stuff. We're getting more focused on arts education. So my staff consists of me, two accountants, and two lawyers, you know.
So far, so good.
So far, so good, yeah.
What's the theater scene like in New Orleans? When I think of New Orleans, I think music.
Oh, they got the Southern Rep down there. It's which is their regional theater, and me myself, God, I haven't worked in New Orleans in over 10 years. But like I said, it's, when I took it over, I agreed to take it over only if I could run it out of Kansas City because I didn't really want to move.
William Inge Foundation,
right? We've been associated with the William Inge Foundation the last 2 years. First, when I was the associate producer for the Living Room Theater, we had taken on their new Play Lab. Where we invite playwrights from around the world, country, to submit work, and then we bring in people to respond to their work. People who know such playwrights as Lee Blessing, Ron West, a myriad of just exceptional writers will come and actually respond to the work of, some of them are more experienced than other playwrights, but we're the producing company that gets all the actors together, and we rehearse the readings, and we put that up. And it looks like we're going to be taking over more responsibility with the foundation. It's a wonderful, I think, 37-year-old organization now. That honors, of course, the great late William Inge, and they've honored playwrights such as Edward Albee, Sondheim, August Wilson, Beth Hinley was there last year. I don't know who the honoree is going to be this year, but it's almost always someone of note. So, and that won't be till mid-May this coming year. So I'll let you know.
Okay. Lie of the Mind, Kansas City Actors Theater, runs through October the 1st. The number to call for more information, 816-235-6222 or online at kcactors.org. I want to thank you both for being with us.
Pleasure.
Forrest Attaway, who plays the role of Mike, and Jake Walker, who plays the role of Frankie, a production of Kansas City Actors Theater. Thanks so much for being with us. After our break, we'll return. We have much more to bring your way when we come back. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare to local theaters. Filmmakers have been trying for years to adapt the political thrillers by the late author Vince Flynn. His CIA super agent Mitch Rapp finally makes his big screen appearance in American Assassin, a noisy thriller that introduces us to Rapp in hopes of creating a new movie franchise. Actor Dylan O'Brien, best known for the Maze Runners movies, plays Rapp, a young man who seeks revenge on terrorists who gunned down his girlfriend. He becomes a black ops recruit and goes into training with no-nonsense agent Stan Hurley, played by Michael Keaton. The training is cut short when a former CIA agent called Ghost, played by Taylor Kitsch, helps some rogue Iranians steal a nuclear weapon. The movie has plenty of action and manages to rev up the audience with its violent revenge tale, but there are leaps of logic in the script that was written by a committee, eroding the film's credibility and dulling its impact. Still, American Assassin is lively enough to please most action fans. Just when you thought every story about Nazi Germany had been told, along comes 13 Minutes. Christian Friedel stars as Georg Elser, a German carpenter who, in November of 1939, created a time bomb all on his own that missed killing Hitler by a mere 13 minutes. While the movie may not quite achieve the emotional resonance it was working for, it's a fascinating account of a little-known piece of World War II history. Also potentially opening this week, All I See Is You is a Mark Forster drama about a blind woman, played by Blake Lively, who suddenly regains her sight and discovers things that put a strain on her marriage. And Mother is a hallucinatory psychological thriller from filmmaker Darren Aronofsky, starring Jennifer Lawrence, Javier Bardem, and Michelle Pfeiffer. Lawrence plays a woman whose marriage is disrupted when unwanted strangers arrive on the scene. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze
Frame! Thank you very much, Russ. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Going to move down to Olathe now. It's not that far of a drive anymore with all the freeways connected together the way they are. And a lot of that construction down there on 435 done now. It's not a far trip at all. They are doing the show Ruthless. They have had one big weekend. They have, what, two more weekends to go. And here to tell us all about the ruthless nature of Ruthless, it's a mock musical, by the way, is the director. Jake Coombs is with us. He is directing and choreographing both the show. I have seen him at Octa. I have seen him at the Barn. I have seen him at Theater in the Park. I did not see him in his show at the new theater. What am I missing in your credits, Jake?
I've worked at almost every theater in town at one point or another, and whatever they'll hire me to do, costume, choreograph, music direct, direct, act. So if you have jobs for me, I'm available.
Are we more comfortable with musicals?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I seem to have seen you in more musicals than anything.
Absolutely more comfortable with musicals.
Yeah. Well, welcome. Welcome
Thank
back.
Thank you.
It's been a while.
It has
what
been
you,
a while.
What have you been doing? No. Welcome back to the show. Sasha Case is with us again.
Hi.
Oh, you've seen her all over. That was it a year ago? Looking on the Facebook pages, she was in about five things in one week. How'd you manage to do that?
Because I'm a crazy person.
She has an impressive list of credits as well. I think she first came to the attention of us, at least me, during the late night theater days.
Ah, yes, which are still going strong. I just did a show there for them this last summer.
No, they have moved. This is not their interview. But Ron McGee, his late night theater, closed. Mm-hmm. But he was fortunate enough. He's now doing some shows occasionally. I'm not sure how often of a schedule. Down at Missy B's
yes.
on Southwest Traffic Light.
Correct. And quite often. They're always coming up with new things to do. They just did a one-night-only production of Valley of the Dolls, which is one of their most popular shows, you know, to help raise money. It was a one-night-only, so, and they did that at, the Folly Theater. The Folly Theater, yes. But regularly, they perform at Missy B's.
Yeah, you're a big breakout, at least as far as I was concerned. You were in Bonanza, you're the all-female version of Bonanza.
I was. I was in the 1998 cast and the 2006 cast. Yes, Hopsy.
Stasha plays, in this particular show, Stasha plays the role of Judy and Ginger both. But boy, I've seen her at the Chestnut, at the Barn, at the American Heartland Theater, a late night theater we mentioned. She is, if you look really close, the Pizza Street girl in some of those reruns of commercials. Yes, that's her. She's a brunette there. She's a redhead now. When did this change occur?
Oh, you know, I'm kind of shifting as my natural hair color tends to be shifting
I see.
Underneath all of this. That's all I'm going to say about that, Michael.
Well, actors never admit anything.
No, I admit it. There's no hiding it. Just putting it out there.
Well, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Once again. Peter Leondis is with us. He is a suit. He's a member of the board of the Olathe Community Theater Association. You have some theatrical credits, though, as well.
Where I do.
Yes. Where have you appeared?
Mainly at the Olathe Civic Theater Association, but I also I was in a show at the Barn Players this summer, and Jay and I were actually in a show at Spinning Tree. So I've been in a few places, but my heart is with Octa.
Ah, okay. And you're on the board of directors?
I am.
And they trusted to send you over here.
No. I was the only one who was available.
Well, that makes me feel good.
Yeah, I jumped at the chance.
Now, he's going to tell us about the season at Octa a little later on. And any questions about Buddy Rogers, you text him on in. I'll pass him over to him.
Absolutely. Yeah, now, I am a noted authority on Mr.
Buddy Rogers was from Olathe.
Yes.
And it's called the Buddy Rogers Theater even now.
It is. It is. We actually hosted Mr. Rogers at our theater a couple of times. Once with a retrospective of his wife, Mary Pickford's films. And apparently the story goes, I wasn't there, but the story goes that Buddy came and he introduced the collection of Mary Pickford films, and he was in the audience, but he couldn't make it. He had recently lost Mary, and so he had to spend the rest of the evening in the lobby because it was too emotional for him to watch.
And I understand.
We lost Buddy, I think, in 1999, but the theater was started with a grant from the Mary Pickford Foundation as well as the city of Olathe. So we have a long connection to Buddy and his family, and we have a little section of the theater dedicated to him and to Mary. And of course, we have a giant mural in the back of our theater dedicated to him that he signed when he was with us on one occasion.
Well, that's very nice. So the theater has a historical basis.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
So see a show,
Buddy Rogers, revel in all that was Buddy. Yes.
Yeah. Now, he was in the first movie that won an Academy Award. It was called Wings.
That's correct.
And he and Mary were both stars of the silent film era.
Mm-hmm.
And from Olathe.
That's
as
right.
You said. Yeah. Now Jay is saying, when are we going to talk about Ruthless? You are in your second week, or will be in your second week. You actually have an industry night performance tonight.
Tonight, yes. I will tell a little bit about the story, but I don't want to give a whole lot away because there are some twists and turns that if you give them away, you lose some of the fun of the show. It's a little girl who's very talented and a woman who would like to represent her, and all of the diabolical ways she gets to play the role that she wants to play, Pippi Longstocking and Pippi in Tahiti, the musical. And so
hence the red
just
hair,
suffice
maybe.
It to say that Louise Lerman does not fare well because she originally got the role, and Tina was going to do anything she could to get that role.
It's done in the style, and you told me this, a mock musical.
A mock musical. They take this musical has aspects. You'll see aspects of MAME, even lines from MAME, aspects of Mama Rose from Gypsy.
Uh-huh.
It's semi-based on the movie The Bad Seed. It's called the Queen Mother of Stage Mothers. Or maybe I'm getting that saying wrong, but there's the stage mother-ness runs rampant.
It's in this subtitled play. The Stage Mother of All Musicals.
Stage Mother of All Musicals. That's the word I was
right.
looking for. But the characters are Sylvia, who wants to be Tina's manager, and Judy, who is Tina's mother. And Tina, and there's a little girl named Louise Lerman, and we've double cast the little girls. I probably could have quadruple cast the little girls. I had so many very talented little girls that auditioned, but that you will be amazed at the talent of these little girls. It's phenomenal. And then there's the third grade teacher who is directing the production of Pippi in Tahiti after her triumph last year directing Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf for her third grade show. And then there's Eve, who's in the second act. She's a secretary to Ginger, who Judy becomes in the second act. And then Lita Encore, who is the adopted mother of Judy, who's a theater critic who hates musicals.
Yeah.
So it is just fun from top to bottom, and it makes fun of musicals in the best way possible, because all of us who do musicals get some scorn from the theater community on occasion, but
musicals are very well attended.
They are.
At yours,
and that's why we can say Nana Nana Boo Boo to them.
At yours and other close by community theaters, musicals are their best selling
yes,
shows.
Absolutely.
Yeah, people like to see the musicals.
Yep.
Look at the Theater in the Park shows and the Leawood Theater, outside theater shows, very well attended.
Yes.
People
but we are able to make fun of ourselves just as well as all those snooty people.
Well, we have to, don't we?
Exactly.
If we don't make fun of ourselves, we'll have the upper hand.
That's right.
<Sorry. laughs> Stasha plays the roles of Judy and Ginger, so you're the mother of this young girl.
I am. I'm Judy Denmark, Tina's mother, and then I also then kind of become Ginger Del Marco. Yes, this has been a dream role of mine for a long time, ever since I saw it. I saw Jay direct it actually twice in the past and loved it and said, when are you going to do this again? I'm almost too old to be the mother of an eight-year-old.
Oh, I don't think that's the case.
So I eked this one out.
Yeah. Do you have tell me about the numbers you sing in the show, because Stasha sings.
I have quite a few numbers. Basically, I do get to sing a song with Trevor French, who plays Sylvia St. Croix, about wondering where Tina's talent comes from, because I'm not musical at all. I love doing that number. One of my favorites is getting to sing as Ginger Del Marco, "It Can Never Be This Way Again, That Way Again." I probably should learn the lyrics probably at this point. But which is kind of cool. About she sings about why she's driven to do what she does. And the funny underlying theme of the musical is, if you have talent, you can't help but be this way, that you have to have the attention, that you have to have the applause, that you can, you know, I want to lead a happy, normal life, but I can't because I have talent. So instead, I have to perform. And maybe a little portion of that is true, seeing as I'm a crazy person who likes to do shows back to back and overlapping and that sort of thing. But it talks about the drive to want to do this, to want to perform, and how she's trying to save Tina from that. But Tina was born with it. You can't help it. Talent is in your blood.
Perhaps a pathological need.
I'm not saying that word gets mispronounced by anyone, me, but maybe it does. A couple of times.
Well, you've been at theaters. Well, you've been at the Chestnut. They have long runs sometimes. Mm-hmm, so you've had a lot of long running shows as well.
And I like both. I like 3 weekends is kind of a good feel, because, you know, 2 weekends doesn't seem long enough. So 3 is usually a good period. But if I'm doing a long run too, if I love what I'm doing, which that's all I really have to do, then I will enjoy a long run as well. And since I have a day job, I don't have to do anything, so I kind of get to say,
ooh. However, 11 weeks of Music Man can get on your nerves a little.
Oh, yeah. Well, those trombones will get to you after a while. All 76 of them. And others as well. Yeah, a lot of musicals. Do you dance in the show as well?
A little bit. This isn't so much of a dancey show. I do get to flip Tina over. Yeah. Which
she does a front walkover.
She does.
Assisted by...
Right off the coffee table. Which is hard to do when I'm wearing those boots. I find that my balance is a little off. So I have to dig in really hard. I wear really, really high-heeled boots, and they're a little terrifying.
For someone who's been a performer most of their life, I'm going to guess.
I'm knocking on wood. I haven't broken my ankle yet in the show, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, a little singing and dancing and... Yeah.
Been a performer for most of your life, I'm going to guess. And you play essentially a stage mother in this. Did you have a stage mother? Not thinking on mom at all.
Sort of. She wasn't somebody, she didn't push us. We kind of said, here's what we want to do. And I kind of followed in my sister's footsteps, Trudy Hurley. She was the one who decided, I'm going to audition for Theater in the Park. And then Dad drove her, so he decided he was going to audition. Then they came back and got me, and so I went and auditioned. Because before that, we would play softball. That was our summer activity with our dad. But then we found out we were really crummy at it. And as I began sitting on the bench more and more, I decided maybe the theater route was the way to go. Or Trudy decided it, and then I said, sure, I'll go along. So I really rode on her coattails for a long time, and she's kind of the one who got me started in theater, and then I found that I loved it.
Oh, yeah. Well, was it great for Dad? Most dads wouldn't audition.
Oh, yeah. And he's come to see the show twice already. But for 20-some years, he did a show every year out at Theater in the Park.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, great. Tell me about some of your fellow performers in the show.
Oh, we have the best cast. I'm so proud of them, and I'm having so much fun working with them. We have Trevor French plays Sylvia St. Croix. So he is a female impersonator, and he's fantastic. And then we have Alicia Stoltz plays my adopted mother, Lita Encore. Julie Moriarty plays Miss Thorne, the third grade teacher. Corey Murphy plays Eve, And she doesn't come in until Act Two as that role. And boy, she makes a huge impact when she gets out there with Penthouse Apartment. She's great. They're great adults. And then these girls, these young girls, they blow my hair back. I mean, I have a hard time competing with them. One of my other favorite songs to sing is, what's the name of that song?
Children.
Thank you, Parents and Children. This song that I sing with my daughter Tina about how we're sort of competing for attention. And I love singing that. And sometimes I have to keep up with these girls, but they are, Joey Brogdon and Mia Cabrera both play Tina on alternating nights. And then when they're not playing that, they get to play a character called, Petunia Pushbroom. So they still get to be on stage even the nights where they're not playing Tina. And then the Louise Lermans are fantastic as well. Julia Masterson and Eva Smith play that role. And then when they're not playing Louise Lerman, they're playing, I'm looking at Jay for Rachel Hobbs. And these, like I said, these girls are fantastic. And then I'd also make sure I mention our fantastic stage manager, Kimberly Taylor Stelting, who does an amazing job, and our crew, which I actually have to change the set over completely from Act 1 to Act 2. That means, I mean, they're unscrewing panels from the walls and so that you can see a whole transformation to the apartment.
It starts as a suburban 1950s-ish house and ends up as a 1960s-ish penthouse apartment.
Mm, very nice.
So they do an amazing
and
job.
And we'd also need to mention our great music director,
Tim Brasselton.
He's the musical fantastic. Director is not easily replaceable.
No, and his opening
overture.
The overture is something to behold. It's Sonia is my wife, and she's doing props, and she asked me, "Did we record that? Are we using a recording?"
He's amazing.
Of the overture, and I'm like, no, that's Tim.
You feel like you're at a fine dining restaurant because he's playing the keyboard back there, and it just sounds beautiful. I feel like I should be eating a steak. In fact, we should look into that.
Yeah. Okay.
So see if it's in the budget. We have a board member here.
It's not in the budget. It's not even remotely in the budget. You can have a bag of peanuts. Would be fine.
There's a piece of toast back there I can nibble on.
There's no rest for Stasha or the cast. An industry night performance tonight. Then a couple of days. Performances pick up again Friday the 22nd at 8 o'clock. Saturday the 23rd at 8 o'clock. A matinee on Sunday the 24th at 2 o'clock. One more weekend of shows Friday the 29th at 8. Saturday the 30th at 8. And October 1st on Sunday at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Buddy Rogers Theater. At 500 East Lula in Olathe, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, you need that zip code 66061. The number to call for more information, 913-782-2990. On the web, I have the page up right now. Well, it faded out on me, but the page is up there. It's olathetheater.org. And we also have a member of the board, a suit, as they always call them. said affectionately and in all in good fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
You like to talk about this is the first show of your 17-18 season.
That's correct. This is the first show of our new season. We're very excited. One of the things that Olathe Civic Theater Association does that I take personal pride in is instead of having a group of us sit in a room and choose the five shows that we want to do and then go out to the community and ask for directors, we actually flip that process on its head and we go out to the directors and say, bring us your passion project. What would you like to direct? What do you have a connection with? And so we open that process up to the community and we get some wonderful suggestions, things that we would never have thought of. So we did that last year and we pulled together a season of five shows that I think is outstanding. Obviously, we open with Ruthless. Next up on our stage is Anne of Green Gables, directed by Heather Tinker. This is the play, not the musical. But if you're familiar with Anne of Green Gables, this is the classic story of Anne with an E. That runs November 3rd through 19th. We have already held auditions for that, and the cast is starting to meet and start reading it and come together. I was fortunate enough to meet the group yesterday. It is a huge group of very talented actors and actresses, so I'm very much looking forward to Anne of Green Gables in November. Then, in the new year, we have the musical Violet, which is a new musical, and while we are not premiering it, I believe they've done it before in town.
Spinning Tree
did it. Yeah,
they did an interview about it too. It sounded very interesting.
Yes, we're very excited. That's going to be directed by Julie Ewing, and I do need to call out that we will have auditions for Violet this coming Saturday, the 23rd. More information on our website at olathetheater.org. Come on out for auditions. And then after Violet, we are thrilled to be a local premiere of Superior Donuts, which is written by Tracy Letts. And this was the play that he wrote immediately after August Osage County. It's a very different play. Mm-hmm. It's a comedy drama about a Chicago donut shop owner and his apprentice and the various and sundry law enforcement officials that come to hang out.
Yeah, after August Osage County, he needed something light.
Yes. he needed essentially a donut.
Oh, yeah.
And he got it. It actually is a wonderful play and has a lot of interesting interaction between the characters. And that is going to be directed by Diane Bulin. Then we close our season with Unnecessary Farce. This is something that we at Okta tend to think we do pretty well, the door-slamming farce. This will be directed by Bill Pelletier. It'll be in June of 2018. And, of course, Mr. Pelletier knows quite a bit about farce, and so we're very lucky to have him. This is the story of some unlucky criminals, even unluckier law enforcement officials, and the doors that slam between them. So Unnecessary Farce closes our season, and we're very excited to be selling season tickets right now on our website at olathetheater.org.
And you can also get individual tickets. For instance, you could probably get tickets perhaps for tonight's show, maybe.
Well, tonight's show are at the door only because it is an industry night.
And $12.
And they are $12.
Okay, we're not supposed to say the price, but... apologize.
I'm so sorry.
Yes. I didn't say anything. I want to point that out.
It's a discounted price from what the normal price is.
And I apologize for Jay.
They do have to take me everywhere twice, once just to apologize.
We've apologized. I think we're covered, I think. But no, we're not supposed to say that on a public radio station.
Oh, understood.
But at any rate, lower than what the normal price would be.
That is correct.
Yes.
That is correct. And so those are available at the door.
Yeah. Only a few minutes remaining. How long is the Olathe Civic Theater been in organization?
Oh, my goodness. This is our 44th season.
Long time. One of the older in the area.
Absolutely. And we are in a 150-year-old historic church in the original town of Olathe. And it was until 1960. It was the Reformed Presbyterian Church. And we bought it with a grant from the city and, of course, the Mary Pickford Foundation and Buddy Rogers family in 1977, I believe. But a lot of exciting things are happening at Okta. We just got new railings for the front of the building, which is tremendously exciting. And we have some big plans coming up for our theater to make the experience of coming to local theater even better. And I'm not at liberty to say exactly what those are, but imagine you'll have a new seating experience and perhaps see some different colors.
Sounds exciting.
And I will leave it at that.
It's a fantastic space, too. It's a kind of a smaller, intimate space. So I always like performing in slightly smaller venues sometimes where you feel... Yeah, you're just right there.
Woman of the people.
Mm-hmm. That's what I am, Michael.
Show continues tonight in an industry night performance, regular performances Friday, Saturday evenings, Sunday afternoon matinees, and then another weekend after that, the 29th, 30th, and the 1st, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon matinee at the Olathe Civic Theater Association, olathetheater.org. They're located at 500 East Lula in Olathe, Kansas, and it's called the Buddy Rogers Theater. I would imagine if they're lost, they'd just stop and ask somebody out in the yard, where's the Buddy Rogers Theater? I bet they would know.
Well, they might.
Well, if they're a fan of theater or the old movies, they would know for sure.
I think most of the signs in the city point to OCTA as our acronym. There are signs throughout the city, and of course we have it on the side of our building.
One of the more growing parts of the community, by the way. What, you, three theaters in that area now, I think. At least two.
At least two.
I hear rumors of a third one, so we'll see what happens. Thanks so much, all of you.
Thank you
for being with us.
Thanks
Jay
for
Coombs,
having us.
He is the director. He was in a Superior Chevrolet commercial. I said it for Stasha. I have to say it for you. Thanks so much for being with us. Stasha Case plays two roles in the show. She sings. She dances a little. You see her from the Pizza Street commercial. Uh-huh. And we'll be very surprised if a certain rock star shows up to see her. That'll happen one day. Thanks so much for being with us. Peter Leondis, member of the board, and all that goes along with that, a lot of responsibility that people don't know about for the Olathe Civic Theater Association. Thanks so much for joining us. The Jazz Insider is next. He has some fine jazz lined up for you. Jazz from 1 to 3, then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you!